Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Bridgegate and Defrauding an Organization Receiving Federal Benefits Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On May 7th, 2020, the Supreme Court decided Kelly v. United States, a case considering whether a public official defrauds the government of its property by advancing a public policy reason for an official decision that is not that official's subjective or real reason for making the decision. In 2013, in a New Jersey scandal known as Bridgegate, petitioners William E. Barone Jr. and Bridget Ann Kelly manufactured a gridlock traffic jam in Fort Lee, New Jersey, after the mayor refused to endorse then-Governor Chris Christie's re-election campaign. Under the guise of a traffic study, the two limited Fort Lee motorists' access to the George Washington Bridge, the busiest bridge in the world, over the period of 4 days coinciding with the local school district's first week of school. Barone and Kelly were indicted in 2015 for conspiracy to obtain by fraud, knowingly convert, or intentionally misapply property of an organization receiving federal benefits, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, actual wire fraud, and conspiracy against civil rights. A jury convicted both defendants on all counts. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit reversed and vacated the civil rights convictions, but affirmed all other judgments of conviction. However, the Supreme Court granted cert to consider whether a public official can defraud the government of its property by advancing a public policy reason for an official decision that was not actually the public's official subjective reason for making the decision. By a vote of 9-0, the Supreme Court held, in an opinion by Justice Kagan, that because the scheme to reduce the number of George Washington Bridge toll lanes dedicated to Fort Lee, New Jersey, mourning commuters as political retribution against Fort Lee's mayor did not aim to obtain money or property from the Federal Port Authority, William Barone and Bridget Kelly could not have violated the federal program fraud or wire fraud laws. And now, to discuss the case, we have Stephen R. Klein, partner at Barr & Klein, PLLC.
So let's set the stage. The George Washington Bridge is the busiest bridge in the world for automobiles, stretching from Fort Lee, New Jersey to Upper Manhattan. William Barone was Deputy Executive Director of the Port Authority, a bi-state agency that manages transportation facilities in New York and New Jersey, including the GW. David Wildstein was Barone's Chief of Staff and later a key witness in this case. Bridget Ann Kelly was Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Chris Christie. To quote the opinion, Kelly often worked hand-in-hand with Barone and Wildstein to deploy the Port Authority's resources in ways that would encourage mayors and other local figures to support the governor, end quote. Usually this was largesse or greasing the wheels, including providing shuttle services in Fort Lee through the Port Authority. But that took a serious turn in September of 2013. On the first day of school, September 9th, this trio closed or redirected 2 out of 3 dedicated lanes from Fort Lee onto the GW during morning rush hour because Fort Lee's mayor, Mark Sokolich, a Democrat, declined to endorse Christie, a Republican, for re-election. Kelly and Barone claimed that at the time that this was for a traffic study. Traffic backed way up into Fort Lee, and a lot of commutes were seriously disrupted. Again, Justice Kagan, writing for unanimous court, writes very well, quote, the three merrily kept the lane realignment in place for another 3 days. It ended only when the Port Authority's executive director found out what had happened and reversed what he called their abusive decision, end quote. Scandal ensued. Barone, Kelly, and Wildstein each lost their jobs. Federal charges followed. By the time the case reached the United States Supreme Court, 3 convictions remained for Kelly and Barone: wire fraud, federal program fraud, and conspiracy. Now, under wire fraud, the government must prove one is obtaining money or property by means of false or fraudulent pretenses, representations, or promises. Similarly, federal program fraud, the government must prove one is obtaining by fraud the property, of a federally funded program or entity which included the Port Authority. The third charge, conspiracy, really depended, of course, on the legitimacy of those two primary charges. Justice Kagan goes through some of the history, both McAnally versus United States in 1987 and Cleveland versus United States in 2000, affirmed the property requirement. This court has made clear that McAnally, et cetera, prevents these statutes from criminalizing all acts of dishonesty by state and local officials. Now, as an aside, after McAnally, Congress enacted the Honest Services Fraud Statute in 1988. That was narrowed to requiring not just the deprivation of the rights to honest services, but narrowed to requiring a bribe or kickback scheme in the case Skilling versus United States in 2010. So what was the government to make of this property requirement? Well, it wasn't the lane realignment out of Fort Lee that this trio was going after via the lie about a traffic study, but the resources to pull off the realignment. Thus, the theory went, the government was defrauded of, one, the money used to compensate traffic engineers for the sham study, and two, the money used to pay backup toll collectors who performed work relating to the lane realignment. Again, to quote the opinion, but that realignment was a quintessential exercise of regulatory power. And this court has already held that a scheme to alter such a regulatory choice is not one to appropriate the government's property, unquote. The use of the Port Authority employees was incidental to the scheme, not the property that was being sought. Now, in counterexamples, Justice Kagan affirms that these laws both still matter and are both still applicable. For example, using fraud to get on-the-clock government workers to renovate a private home, using fraud to induce government employees to do gardening work for political contributors, very traditionally using fraud to take cash from a government bank account. All of these might properly fall under wire fraud or federal program fraud, and there are plenty of citations to show that such convictions have occurred and have been upheld. Again, to quote the opinion, but that property must play more than some bit part in a scheme. It must be an object of the fraud, end quote. Otherwise, it's plain to see that any deception relating to government regulatory authority will involve labor costs. A very nice citation, I think footnote 2 in the opinion, actually cites an opinion by Judge Easterbrook from the 1990s. To quote the opinion, every regulatory decision requires the use of some employee labor, but that does not mean every scheme to alter a regulation has that labor as its object, unquote. Finally, let me quote one more. If U.S. attorneys could prosecute as property fraud every lie a state or local official tells in making such a decision, the result would be, as Cleveland recognized, a sweeping expansion of federal criminal jurisdiction, end quote. Now, in January, in a teleforum following oral argument in this case, I predicted, with a fair amount of hedging, that there would be a unanimous or near unanimous ruling for Kelly and Baroni. And unanimous it was. If it weren't for a jury trial, guilty verdict, and an affirmation of that verdict by the Third Circuit, you might think there is nothing to see here. In just over 12 pages, Justice Kagan precisely lays out that, leave Skilling aside, leave McDonald aside, leave more recent Supreme Court decisions aside, the theory here was pretty thoroughly rejected by Cleveland versus United States 20 years ago. But what is a law in the face of righteous indignation? And from serious people, no less. Here's a small sampling from Twitter yesterday. Quote, the Supreme Court's a devoted combatant against anti-corruption laws, and that includes Republican and Democratic appointees. They can't conceive that corruption exists or that laws have a role in stopping it. That's from Walter Schaub, former director of the Office of Governmental Ethics and senior advisor to Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, otherwise known as CREW. From academia, here's a tenured opinion. The Bridgegate decision is dispiriting and further limits the ability of prosecutors to go after mendacity or corruption by government officials. This is a win for corrupt politicians everywhere. That's Professor Chara Torres-Spellacy of Stetson University School of Law. It would be foolish for me to not acknowledge here that indeed Kelly and Baroni behaved corruptly. They broke the public trust and should never have a place in government again. I suspect neither of them will. But that's not enough, at least not for the professional reform community. Even from attorneys and law professors, we get this indignation against a 9-0 opinion. Take the nastiest, silliest conspiracy theory you can come up with. Farthest left justice, whomever you might believe that is, and farthest right justice, whomever. Doesn't matter. No dissenting opinion, much less dissenting vote. Same story as McDonnell in 2016. Even Skilling in 2010 was unanimous as to the narrowing of honest services fraud. What do we make of not just commentators angry about broader corruption, but legal scholars unleashing similar rhetoric against the entire Supreme Court? Corruption is not the object of wire fraud and federal program fraud. That's it. That's pretty much the whole Kelly decision. That does not necessarily mean the corruption here could not be legally punished. As Justice Kagan pointed out specifically, New Jersey has an official misconduct statute. That would have been a more appropriate charge to bring here, but at trial and on appeal, it would also have been susceptible to serious challenges. Mr. Barone was pretty clearly authorized to redirect those lanes, and the New Jersey law Kagan cites requires, quote, unauthorized exercise of official functions, unquote. Culturally, it's a blessing that we're collectively outraged by corruption such as Bridgegate. In far too many countries, far worse corruption is expected and accepted. But I believe the outrage has gone too far. Corruption is so broadly defined that it now basically means to hold opposite political views. To be corrupt can mean to exercise one's power lawfully, but in a manner that others oppose. Make no mistake, this is a bipartisan problem. Following yesterday's ruling, which vindicated some Republicans, I literally received a text from a non-attorney friend asking, quote, will they finally go after? I'll let you fill in the blank. You have dozens of political actors to choose from, given the zeitgeist. But we as lawyers in any capacity of any political persuasion or any constitutional school of thought have a duty to rise above this zeitgeist, as the court has consistently done. The line of cases here, from McNally to Cleveland to Skilling to McDonnell to Kelly, is now a broken record. This should be a wake-up call for prosecutors, law students who aspire to be prosecutors, the academics who teach those law students, and write on those topics of corruption and ethics, and perhaps most importantly, the professional reform community at large. Reversing the convictions here is not a win for corruption. It is an affirmation that to ignore the law in curing corruption is the greatest corruption of all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers. Founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.